Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Well, welcome to episode 4 of the Red Reporter podcast 2019 edition. We are coming to you right after the Reds just picked Texas Christian University left-handed pitcher Nick Lodolo with the number 7 overall draft pick in the 2019 Major League Baseball draft. He was the first pitcher taken, which actually ended up breaking the longest string in draft history of position players. And the kind of consensus coming into this draft was that, obviously, because the Reds have wonderful luck, that there were 6 prime position player prospects that were all going to go first. And then what the Reds chose to do at number 7 was kind of up in the air. But Lodolo seems to be pretty consensus-wise the top pitching prospect in this draft. 6'6 lefty, who's skinnier than Chris Sale. But a guy who does project to be a pretty fast mover and a guy who could impact the Reds rotation sooner rather than later. So with that in mind, we got a couple of prospect analysts slash Major League Draft specialists on the podcast right now. Joining us from north of the wall, we have Aaron, our farmers only commando. Aaron, what's going on, buddy?
Not a lot. I like the whole Game of Thrones toss in there for Minnesota, I guess.
Yeah. Also joining us is the only Red Reporter writer to ever feature on the cover of Tiger Beat magazine. In Ohio, we've got the one and only Charlie Scrabbles. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, not a whole lot. How about you guys? Everything's good?
Things are good. Things are good for sure. So, as for Nick Lodolo, what are your thoughts on the pick, on the selection of him over going somewhere else, on the fourth Nick drafted in the first round by the Reds? Just kind of general thoughts on everything else. Aaron, what do you think?
I think it's just one of those things that I don't know, picking 7th after being so bad, and then you realize everybody else in the major leagues were even worse. You know, you get a pick like this, and I guess that's one of those things why people aren't very excited about it. Me looking at it personally, knowing absolutely almost nothing about the draft before we went into this, looking at some scouting reports and some videos, I think there's a lot more to be excited there than, you know, probably was laid out there for us to look at ahead of time. I mean, you have a kid that's lefty. He throws with almost no effort at all, at least from what I can see. 92 to 95. He's got 2+ pitches. I saw a really, really good slider. He likes to flip up there, and at least from the about 10 minutes of video I was watching, a changeup that he usually uses to get right-handers out. But from what I saw, at least in a short amount of video lookup, and just that scouting report, I don't know how you could really do much better in this draft at number 7 than the guy that they got.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. Mr. Scrabbles, how about you? What are your thoughts?
I think Aaron is totally wrong. I think this guy's fine at number 7. Like Aaron was saying, the videos look really good on the kid. The slider looks really sharp. I was pretty excited to see that. And you know, he's got a lot of projection in him for being a He's a college junior. So he's already, what, 20, 21, I think is how old he is or whatever. So he's a little farther along than what, you know, like a regular high school draftee would be. But he's still got some projection in him. Like, he's 6'6 and 185 pounds. If he puts on, you know, another 20 pounds when he, you know, turns into an actual man, then he could have a whole lot. It could be a completely different pitcher at that point, you know, pitching with completely different mechanics. And I guess I could go the other way now that I'm thinking about it, saying it out loud. But he's got a lot of he's got a lot of projection in him still, I think, more than what he gets credit for at points. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And as well as it's, you know, obviously there are a lot of different angles going along with picking Lodolo first as the first pick of the Reds draft this year. You know, obviously he's a pitcher. And if you look back at the Reds' history of drafting pitchers, aside from Mike Leake, well, put it this way. If you look at the Reds' history of drafting pitchers in the first round and then developing them into big league starters, you can't really even include Mike Leake because he skipped the minors altogether. So if you remove him from the conversation and you look back at the Reds' history of drafting starting pitchers or drafting relievers to try to convert them into starting pitchers, not great, Bob. You know, you look through the Nick Traviesos and the Nick Howards, and hopefully Robert Stevenson is beginning to give the Reds something at this point. Michael Lorenzen, you know, kind of flamed out as a starter and is providing value in the bullpen and as a reliever at this point. But even going back further than that, the Reds have had some issues going big on pitchers in the first round. So to do this, and you know, the early reports are that he's going to agree to the full slot amount of $5.43 million. This isn't even an example of the Reds kind of going on a pitcher that they like but don't love and then trying to save some money on it as well. It seems like they're fully invested in this kid. So, you know, at this point in the rebuild, what are your thoughts on them leaning with going with a pitcher and committing that much money to him? And also just a college pitcher as well who will hopefully move quickly when the previous years of drafting starting pitchers hasn't exactly panned out for him. Charlie, what do you think, man?
Yeah, looking back at the Reds as an organization, not just this particular, you know, brain trust and the scouts and, you know, the coaches and all that stuff, but going back generations, the number of pitchers that they've been able to develop from the draft is, I think they're one of the worst in baseball in that regard. So they've had a lot of bad luck. They've had a lot of bad drafting. They've had a lot of bad things that have happened with pitchers. So in that context, yeah, I mean, selecting anybody in the draft is going to be a major stress issue. Again, you know, this is a kid coming out this year. He really has nothing to do with the all of these other pitchers that have had. He has nothing to do with the Brett Tomkos and the Chris Gruelers and all of those guys, right? This is a completely this is a new organization in a number of different regards. But like I said, you know, there's a lot to like about this kid. I think a lot of kids getting drafted may think twice about being drafted by the Reds, but. You know, I'm still optimistic because what the hell?
Yeah, for sure. Aaron, what do you think?
I think you summed it up pretty good when you brought up Mike Trout. I mean, you're not Mike Trout. Mike Leake.
Mike Trout.
Mike Leake. Mike Leake. Steve Holt. But with Mike Leake, the whole thing that the Reds don't draft pitchers that work. And I don't know how many times we've followed a draft and we've looked at a draft that, we've looked at pitchers and the Reds take some guy that they think is projectable, a high school arm. You know, they got this kind of flash mentality thing to it, or, you know, they got to turn a college reliever into a starter, you know, that whole experiment. But when you take a guy like, you know, Mike Leake and Nick Lodolo, I mean, they're almost interchangeable. They're almost the exact same guy when it comes down to it, of being a low to mid 90s thrower, off speed pitches. You know, they're already refined. They already have this certain amount of pedigree that it kind of takes the, I guess, the risk out of it that the Reds have typically taken when it comes to pitchers, because either they're picking too late or they're going for something that they think is projectable, which they've really sucked at picking up on.
Yeah, I think that's really the key to it is, you know, going for a high polished guy like Leake or like this kid Lodolo. I heard the I think it was John Mayos, the guy on the TV. He pronounced it Labello, and so I believe that's gospel now. So that's what I'm going with. But yeah, you know, getting a high polished kid like this out of college is a different thing than getting a high school kid. But yeah, you hit it right on the head.
But I think it goes back to like taking. The Reds took Nick Trabieso, however you say his name, over Michael Wacha. And when you look at a high school kid compared to a college kid and what they've done in that 3 years, even this Lodolo guy, I mean, he's a first-round draft pedigree, essentially, that said no to $2 million, who now is going to sign for $5 million. I don't care about the money, but he's more than enough proven himself that he's worth of a number 7 draft spot, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to point out is that he was the highest drafted player in the 2016 draft to not sign. I think he went, 41st overall in the competitive balance round of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Those guys, they don't get good things.
Yeah, exactly, right? So in other words, what that means is that when he was in high school and what he's done in college, there's been nothing to really dent his prospect pedigree in that regard. And it shows that he's been very highly regarded for a long period of time. So he's not one of those guys even Nick Senzel, who was a very fast riser, Jonathan India as well, guys who were good prospects, but they put in a great final season in college to really shoot up draft boards. This guy has been on team's radar for 4 years and has done nothing in his last 3 seasons to really dent that. So I think he does have that going for him. I think it does kind of help cement the general consensus that he's only maybe a mid-rotation starter. I think it's probably because of an exposure thing, that he's had a lot of eyes on him for a long time now, and because he was so highly drafted 3 years ago, he's had people dissecting him that long. So, it's also interesting to note that he is a left-handed pitcher, and if anything, the Reds have actually had a little bit of success drafting and developing left-handed pitchers more so than the righties they've taken at the top end of the draft. It's not a who's who of great pitchers over the last 10 years, but two of the guys that they have taken with relatively high picks that have panned out as legit big league players have been Travis Wood and have been Tony Cingrani. So maybe there's something about having a lefty and having it be a little bit different than just your stock issue 98-mile-an-hour flame-throwing righty, but they have had at least a little bit better track record with that. That said, the last time they swung big on a left-handed starting pitching prospect out of Texas Christian University, it was in the Johnny Cueto trade. And it was Brandon Finnegan, who obviously has shown some decent flash at the big league level before ripping both shoulders in half within the last 2 years and hasn't quite put it back together since then. But hopefully this time around, they're going to get a little bit better luck in that regard. I guess beyond that, was there anybody else who kind of stood out in this draft that you hoped might have fallen to the Reds?
The guy that I was all about was the guy who went number 3 to the White Sox, Andrew Vaughn. He's like 5'11". He's a first baseman, and he's had twice as many walks as strikeouts over the last 2 seasons. The dude just hits. He's one of they're saying on the internets and the televisions, and everybody was saying this. He could be one of the best college hitters of all time. And looking at his stuff, I did a little research for the bit that I wrote there last week, and looking at some of his videos, he has a really nice looking swing. He's kind of he moves like a fire hydrant, but the swing is really good looking. So I'm a little sad to miss out on him, but yeah, there were a lot of those top 6 prospects were all they were all intriguing in their own ways. The top 6 that went.
For me, I'd pick the same guy. I didn't do a whole lot of research at all going into this draft, but just seeing the video of his swing that they were showing on MLB Network, which I would like to just point out now for the internet how awful their coverage of the draft is.
But God, it's terrible.
It's one of the worst things I've ever watched. But they did show a video of this guy's swing, which makes up for it, even if that's, you know, obvious thing that you should do. But that Vaughn that went at 3rd, he would have been a guy I would have loved to drop the 7, even if, you know, they said right now – he's a guy that you could put in a major league lineup right now with that swing. That might be some really heavy praise, but that's one of the prettiest swings I've probably ever seen in a video.
Yeah, I agree with you. They even highlighted his leg kick and mentioned Josh Donaldson as a guy whose swing it kind of seemed like they almost had been patterned after. And anytime you're talking about that kind of offensive impact player out there, it's certainly easy to fall in love with him and hope it could have fallen to the Reds. But I do feel like the Reds did a pretty good job of selecting not just the best player available, but a guy who's got enough upside to warrant that kind of money and that kind of high draft pick, and also a guy who in theory hopefully will move quickly to the point where we'll see him as a part of the rebuild that we're seeing the Reds hopefully beginning to emerge out of as well. You know, obviously, Hunter Green is a tremendous talent. Injuries aside, he was the kind of guy that you draft and you dream on and you wait 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years before we ever get a chance to see him. Lodolo, it seems like it's one of those guys who, if everything goes right, you might see him in 2 years and maybe even sooner than that. And so I think the intrigue there is also certainly built up a little bit, especially now that we've got, you know, Nick Senzel fresh up 2.5 years after he was picked as well. So hopefully it's the kind of person who's a fast mover, but we'll get a chance to see how that shakes out later on this year. So I guess just kind of on the draft as a whole, the Reds, as their small market, small revenue nature has been over the last, pretty much their entire existence, but specifically over the last 5, 6, 7 years, they've always had a competitive balance round pick, whether it was round A or round B. It was one of those picks that, you know, Major League Baseball put in place in the draft when they put the hard cap system in to allow some of the teams that either don't have high revenues or have small markets to be able to pick up extra early round picks. And they've used those to pick some pretty decent players. I know they pretty much got Michael Lorenzen in a pick like that. They got Alex Blandino a couple years in a pick like that as well. And I think Jesse Winker also. They don't have one this year because that was part of the deal they sent to the New York Yankees when they picked up Sonny Gray. I guess, and so that means that they don't pick again until pick number 49, which is in the second round and will happen at some point later tonight once MLB Network stops spending 25 minutes on every single pick. But I guess, what are your thoughts on what to expect out of this year's draft as a whole, since you're not going to see guys like Taylor Trammell even, you know, the ability to swing big on a high school guy and throw a big bonus at him because they've got a pick in the 30-ish range. What do you think about the strategy of doing that and whether or not that helped play a part in going for a big college guy right off the bat and giving him a full bonus because they're not trying to save money elsewhere? Aaron, what do you think?
I think you see it mostly just from having that trade. I mean, the Reds have always, it seems like from draft to draft, I mean, even a guy like Nick Senzel, who was a, you know, college junior and was second overall, they still signed the guy for under slot value by like what, $1.5 million?
Yeah, like 1.8, something like that. Yeah.
Something they can, you know, go turn into a Taylor Trammell and kind of coax him to come play pro ball a bit early. I would expect this year to be much more simplistic. That maybe in the second and third rounds, you're probably seeing some more at slot value kind of things. But I think then you start to see in the fourth, fifth, sixth, where they do college senior thing where they're offering them $10,000. I would expect it to be pretty simple. I don't expect it to be those big bonuses that we've seen in the past. Not that the Reds don't spend on amateur players like this, because they obviously do. It's just this draft is a lot different than what they've had in the past when it comes to competitive balance picks.
Yeah, you know, even last year with Jonathan India, they got him for underslot as well, and that allowed him to go big on Mike Ciani in, what, the fourth round, I guess, and throw a $2 million bonus at him in the fourth round to send him out of high school and keep him from going to Virginia. Yeah, you know, Charlie, what do you think, man? Like, it seems like this is kind of one of those things where the draft strategy that they put in place – today and tomorrow and Wednesday seems like it kind of must have had a distinct commitment to doing that when they made the Sonny Gray trade a couple months ago.
You know, it strikes me these past few years, which we've been operating under the Dick Williams regime, it seems like they've had a very deliberate strategy throughout the entire thing, and one that they're not terribly open about, but one that, with a little bit of reading between the lines, it's pretty clear to see that they have a pretty clear idea of what they want to do and how they're going to do it. And
a lot of dick moves, yeah.
Yeah, right? And I think this falls right into that. You know, I mean, they very deliberately went out this winter and they bolstered the major league team so that they could get the rebuild to the next level, to where we're, you know, beyond the collecting top five pick phase, and we're moving into the getting towards contention phase. And when you are hoarding amateur talent like that and trying to build up the farm system, guys like Mike Ciani are really valuable at doing that, right? You get Taylor Strammell like that. And this is not that phase of the rebuild anymore. And that's really, I don't know, I'm really excited about that, right? I mean, it would be great to be able to pick up another pick here. But, you know, Sonny Gray is one of the best pitchers in the National League so far this year. So, yeah, I think I'm okay with where we are with it.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously they gave up Shed Long in that trade as well. So they did literally shed some top-tier minor league baseball talent. Whoa, yo, it's the long con. I was waiting for that one. But they did actually pick up – they did pick up Reaver San Martin as well in that deal, who's a 23-year-old, who's currently in high A and probably will be at double A at some point after this draft, where when rookie league starts and all the rosters begin to shake out a little bit. So they did get another prospect who looks like he would have been roughly about the same value as picking 35th or 37th or whatever it would have been at that juncture as well. So they did kind of backfill in that regard. For me, it just kind of like extrapolating down the road, and who knows if this is at all true, but it's kind of fun to think about. The Reds have spent so much time over the last few years focusing on trades. Previous years, it was trades to restock the farm system while they sold off their veterans. This past winter, it was trade fringe average prospects to get fringe big leaguers because of their salary and control purposes from other teams, or players that were too expensive on teams that were up against luxury tax stuff, just kind of exploiting weaknesses in the market out there. You look up now, and their decision to kind of punt on having a competitive balance round pick when that's been such a solid spot for them to kind of pluck an extra really good top-tier player in the draft. It also coincides with them, in theory, if they don't make any other moves, shedding some $63 to $65 million off the payroll at the end of this year. It almost makes you wonder if they've been gearing up this entire time to say, hey, after this winter, that's when we're going to start shelling out contracts and getting big league guys. We're not hoarding prospects anymore. And we didn't need that pick at this juncture in time to be able to kind of have that, because we're focusing more on the next 3-4 years. And
this has been the plan the whole time.
Yeah, it's been one big 8-year window for Dick Williams and Nick Kroll and company. But it'll be obviously interesting to see how that plays out down the road, because we've got plenty more of that to find out about. So. We're gonna get another pick tonight at some point, and even the second round. I mean, you draft number 49 overall. You look at, you know, obviously we mentioned the competitive balance round guys, but if you look at the players that were picked either as the second pick by the Reds in a draft or as the second round picks for Reds in the draft, and you've seen a lot of good players picked up in that second round too. Joey Votto obviously was a second round pick. Zach Cozart was a second round pick. Travis Wood, who we talked about earlier, was also a second round pick.
Hey guys, do you remember when Travis Wood almost pitched a perfect game?
I do.
I remember.
And still lost that game.
Do you remember when Travis Wood made an all-star team with the fucking Cubs?
let's do bad Travis Wood memories night.
Remember earlier when you said the only two successful lefties that the Reds drafted were Travis Wood and Cingrani, and they both turned up to be bullpen arms?
Yeah.
God, this team sucks at drafting pitching.
Oh, well, we've got Amir Garrett, too. I guess we can't forget Amir Garrett. So hopefully
Tyler Malley, he was, what, a sixth-round pick?
Tyler Malley's my boy.
Tyler Malley's not a lefty. Are you watching games in a mirror, Charlie Scrabbles?
I thought you were talking pictures. Come on, man.
Hmm. Anywho, no, we should do a Travis Wood memory night. We've got to make sure we get Arkansas Reds fan on for that one. So,
Right.
Yeah, we can talk Cliff Lee and Travis Wood and bow hunting and looking like Dale Earnhardt Jr. and all the above. Yeah, so
Talk about your flavors of Skol.
Oh, Skol, some bandits. Straight Copenhagen. So yeah, I guess with that, any other thoughts on where the Reds are right now? Any other Reds related Redsness that you guys want to touch on real quick?
They could try winning more.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? They should not face Max Scherzer more often.
That sucks. I watched that whole game and I'm like, I don't know why I'm watching this game. They're not going to beat Max Scherzer. The Reds never beat Max Scherzer.
I will say, watching that game, and it's something that obviously if you look at the stats and if you paid any attention whatsoever to just general baseball over the last, 12 years, Max Scherzer is a walk-in first ballot Hall of Famer for me. I think he's actually going to end up being kind of the poster boy for the modern era of baseball analytics and shrinking pitch counts and third time to the order guys and all the above, because he's in his mid 30s and he is just still gassing guys left and right. And he's one of the few pitchers that's been able to continuously buck the mold of the modern Major League Baseball starter. And he does it basically across the board. It's not because he's got one thing. It's not because he's a knuckleballer or whatever. He throws hard. He throws great pitches. He locates and he strikes you the fuck out. He's the best pitcher of this generation, and I think it's kind of no contest at this point.
Plus, he's got two different colored eyes. On his bust for the Hall of Fame, do they put down his two different colored eyes?
Can you do that? Can you do like one bronze eye?
Do they put on like a Tigers cap and a Nationals cap, but then two different colored eyes as well?
Can you do like a brass eye and like a copper eye on the bust? Will they rust differently?
He's pretty much a Siberian Husky. I mean,
just to close, Fish Bones mentioned they should start winning more, right? They are eighth right now in run differential in all of Major League Baseball. That's not just National League. They're the eighth best team in run differential. The winning is going to start right now.
I've mentioned it a couple times over the course of the last few months, but I think it bears repeating now, especially because we're starting to see some of it trickle down. The Reds started this season, and I'm not saying this is my opinion, but if you polled a lot of Reds fans on whatever, March 23rd or a week before the season started, on who the best pitcher the team had, the best hitter the team had, and the best prospect the team had, there are a lot of people that would have said the best pitcher was Alex Wood, the best hitter was Scooter Jeanette, and the best prospect was Nick Senzel. And the Reds played 6 weeks without all three of them. Finally got Senzel back up, and you look at the way that they've played since they got him up, and they look like a shitload better team. They're going to get Scooter back in the next 2 weeks or so. What the hell happens to the roster?
I don't know my damn mind, they put him at second base, and Dietrich is sitting, though.
If he's playing right field because Yasiel Puig and then crap, or if Winker's in right and Dietrich's in left, it'll work itself out.
We're going to need a whole podcast episode on what the hell happened.
Broken.
Put it this way. What I'm getting at is that in the next couple of weeks, they're going to get back two players that, if you'd ask a lot of people in March, Alex Wood and Scooter Jeanette could have been the best hitter and best pitcher on the team. And they haven't had any of those guys all year. They finally got Senzel up, and they've been playing infinitely better baseball since then. I think the Reds still have the best of their 2019 vintage left in them. Maybe they just they popped the bottle and have been letting it air out for 2 months, but I think they're going to pour and chug at some point later on this season. And I'm excited as hell to see what they do. I don't know what they're going to do in terms of playing time, because it's going to be a roster glut that's clogged as hell, but it's going to be a good problem to have, you know?
You just wait. The month of July, Votto's going to hit 10 dingers.
10 dingers. A 10. A fucking 10. 10 dingers.
4th of July.
So, anything else?
No, I think that's good, boss.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. So, Nick Lodulo? Lodolo?
Lodolo. Lodolo. Like, rhymes with the beer, Modelo.
Nick Yellodolo. Welcome to the Reds, Nick, and I hope that you become the next great Reds pitching prospect the next great Reds pitcher, because they've had a lot of good prospects.
Great Reds pitcher that actually pans out.
Yeah, because They could certainly use one. There's no denying that. They've got a couple good ones right now, but better the pipeline, the better the team. So, well, good stuff, guys. Thank you for joining me. Everybody listening out there, you can find us on the World Wide Web at worldwideweb.redreporter.com. You can find us on Twitter at Red Reporter. You can find us on Facebook at Red Reporter Fans. Don't get on Facebook. Just don't do that. Anyway,
Superhighway.
Yeah. And you can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud and I don't know, like five other places BK signed up for like 5 years ago that I just like clicked renew on. Anyway, for the Red Reporter podcast, thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Charlie Scrabbles, for joining us this time around. And we will see you guys at some point next week.
Thanks, fellas.